Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
Moses gave them the materials donated by the people of Israel as sacrificed offerings for the completion of the sanctuary. But the people continued to bring additional gifts each morning. Finally, the craftsmen who were working on the sanctuary left their work. They went to Moses and reported, "The people have given more than enough materials to complete the job the Lord commanded us to do." That is Exodus 36, verses 3 through 5. This is Sandra Flack. Thank you for joining us today for episode 227 of the Orphans No More podcast. We're here to inspire you to step up, encourage you to stay up, and offer some hope so you will look up. Last week, I took to Facebook Live again to give away the book Every Breath We Take, written by Terry Wordle. My guest last week, Amy Willman from Wholehearted Soul Care, referenced the book as we talked about the toxic stress affecting all of us due to the COVID-19 shutdown and the national crisis triggered by the horrific death of George Floyd. She shared the why and how of self-care to help us navigate our new normal. And today, I'm thrilled to announce that I'll be going on Facebook Live again to give away not just one, but five books. Now, I opened with Exodus 36, 3 through 5. Verse 5 says, "The people have given more than enough materials to complete the job the Lord has commanded us to do." Well, our guest today has written the book, Until There's More Than Enough, Working Together to Transform Foster Care Where You Live. Jason Weber has generously offered to send his Until There's More Than Enough book to five of our winners. So check out my Facebook page, my live video today, which is, if you're listening to this, hopefully you're listening to it on Monday, June 29th, because that's the day we're going to go Facebook Live. You can enter to win one of those five books. Your name will be entered into a drawing to win the book just by liking, sharing, and commenting on my Facebook Live video. So whether you go on while I'm live and say hi to me, or whether you watch the video later on that day or the next morning, either way, you can be eligible for the drawing by liking the video, sharing it, and please do share it, or commenting on the video. If you do all three of those things, your name will go in the drawing for three times. And this book is really a book for anyone who has a heart for kids in foster care, for orphan ministry, foster care ministry, children's ministry. If you want to have to make a change, to make a difference in the lives of children in foster care, then this book is an excellent resource for you, for your church, for your church foster care and adoption ministry. So you're going to want to make sure that not only you get in that drawing, but if you are one of those people, share it with your Facebook friends. If you have an adoption or foster care ministry at your church, you're going to want everybody who's in your group to have a chance to win this book, because you're really going to want this book as a resource. So I'm going to be moving on to introduce our guest. So I am so excited to bring to the show today our guest, Jason Weber. He is the National Director of Foster Care Initiatives with CAFO, Christian Alliance for Orphans. He writes a regular column for Fostering Families Today and is the host of the More Than Enough podcast. You're going to want to check that out. And he's the author of the book that I was just talking about, Until There's More Than Enough, Working Together to Transform Foster Care Where You Live. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thanks for having me, Sandra. Great to be here.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I'm so excited to have you back. I know you were on the show a number of years ago. You told your family's foster care story, and I know your passion is children and foster care, and I'm so glad to have you back, because since that time you've written this book and there's so much more going on. So I want to talk about the book specifically today, Until There's More Than Enough. It's hot off the press. I just finished it, and I found it to be an excellent must-have resource for those of us who care about children in foster care. I know that's your passion too. Why did you write this book?
Yeah, you know, we, for a long time, for decades and decades, we've had foster care activity, and foster care activity is good. Right. It is what has provided families for a lot of kids. It's what has reunified biological families back together and restored families. The normal activities of foster care have been very good. But it's also insufficient. We have, you know, more and more kids that every day wait for families, wait for an appropriate placement for foster care. Families that are struggling and aren't getting the support they need, biological families who, and the most common words we hear in the foster care system are the two words, not enough resources, not enough support, not enough families. And one of the things that we've been able to observe over the last two decades is this emergence of this different kind of thing that we hadn't really seen in this form before, where groups of churches start banding together and start asking questions and start working together and come to the state in a very humble way, not in a, hey, we're here to take over way, but in a, hey, we've been gone for too long way. And what can we do to serve? What can we do to help? And in those places where we've begun to see that happen, we see something just incredible begin to bubble up. These local foster care movements, where a lot of families are beginning to be recruited and trained and raised up. And one of the things that we see in these places is, when we move from foster care activity to foster care movement, one of the changes we see is we see a lot more people being engaged in the world of foster care that aren't getting paid to do so, right? Like foster mm-hmm. care, we've come to see it as a thing that, you know, the social workers and the lawyers and the judges and the foster parents even, that all of those folks are folks, that is the foster care system. But where you see foster care movement is you see people who are doing other things during the day and are spending their evenings supporting families, or spending their weekends training families. We're seeing people who aren't paid to do so engaging, because really, while all of those people that are getting paid, the work they're doing is incredible. It's just the problem's too big for them to handle alone. It takes our communities taking ownership of that problem and owning it. And so this book is just a reflection of those kinds of movements that have been raising up. It's not, here's a new idea, let's try it. No, it's something that communities have been doing for a couple of decades, and let's describe what's been happening, and then let's talk about the things that those communities are learning about how to raise up groups of churches to work together with government in a humble, respectful, productive way to transform foster care in local communities.
And I know you have been a foster parent, so this is something that is you've seen firsthand, you're passionate about, you've done inner city mission ministry work. So you want to get the church involved in this. And it's near and dear to your heart, as is mine. And I know here where we are in upstate New York, we launched Care Portal. We've implemented Care Portal here, which is activating churches in this same space. So when you talk about foster care movement, Jason, what do you mean by that? And where have you seen it? Because I know you referenced there's a couple stories that you have that can really paint that picture for us.
Yeah. Well, at its core, if you think about some concentric circles, right, you think about it like a target. And at the center of that, you've got a family that's caring for kiddos. And so that could be a foster family, a kinship family, an adoptive family, a biological family, but you've got families caring for children. The next circle out that is serving that family is the church, where we have a supportive church that's doing a good job of supporting those families in the center. And then outside of that church, you have community partners, agencies, organizations who are supporting a group of churches who are supporting families. So when we talk about movement, what we really mean is, and that picture, if you can picture that in your mind, is a little reversed from how we normally think of it. We normally think of it as families that are served by agencies and organizations, and then those agencies and organizations are served by churches who kind of recruit to help the agency do what it does. And what we're saying is, no, churches are taking ownership of this problem in their community, and they're saying, no, this is really a problem that we were supposed to solve. Now, we need community partners like agencies and organizations to help us do that. They have expertise, and experience that we need, but they're really helping the local church band together and say, we're here. This is part of our passion for broken things and the hurting in our community. And this is part of what we're called to be and do. This is what it looks like to be a city on a hill, is to love our neighbor. And so that's what that looks like. So practically speaking, examples of that, it's happening in a lot of different places. It's happening in Arkansas and in Oklahoma. It's happening in Colorado and in Florida and in California and in Texas. And it's where groups of churches band together. So one example in Arkansas started about 12 years ago, a group of 25 churches got together in a room with county and state workers for the state. And one of the pastors of one of those churches, one of the more prominent churches in town, got up in front, Ray Williams, and he said, you know, first of all, to the state, to the people in the room from the state, we owe you an apology and we need to ask your forgiveness. We were supposed to be here doing this a long time ago, and we've been absent for too long. We've handed this over and we're sorry and we're asking for your forgiveness. Wow. And we're here to ask how we can help, how we can serve you. And so that began, there were tears and there was, you know, because, you know, the state is used to community meetings, right? And what they're used to is they come to these community meetings, people show up, and everybody gets up on the microphone and tells them how bad of a job they're doing, how many kids they're failing, how short they're falling. And the difference when we talk about starting movement in your community is it's the church not coming and pointing out failure. It's the church coming in and saying, we see gaps and we're here to help fill them. Not we're not out there trying to find and point out potholes. We're walking around with our bag of asphalt and we're filling them in, and that's what we're here to do. And so they began working, those 25 churches began working with the state of Arkansas, began changing how they did things, changing how they did training, engaging more churches, getting churches to volunteer their space to be used for trainings, began filling trainings up. You fast forward now to today, in the state of Arkansas, 2/3 of all certified foster families in the state come through local churches that have been trained and equipped. These families have been trained and equipped by this collaborative called The Call. So when you think about those numbers, that's sort of nuts. Like 2/3 of all certified foster families are being equipped and trained and recruited by this collaborative organization. So that's just one example. And we're seeing that kind of thing in other states as well, where we're seeing a significant increase in the number of families. We're seeing, you know, one of the main roles the church can play, and we see this in places like Georgia, Promise 686, Faithbridge Foster Care, North Point Church, the church that is pastored by Andy and Sandra Stanley. They all do a really great job of supporting families. And in many of those places where they're doing that support, they're seeing retention rates of foster families. It's normal for a foster family to be done within 1 year. That's one placement, like within 1 year, they're done. 50% are done within a year. But in some of those places where they're getting really good support from the church, where you got three or four families who are, you know, they're dedicated to wrapping around a foster family, we're seeing that retention rate go up to 90%. And so we often in foster care and adoption talk about how we have a recruiting problem and we just need to get more families. We need to get more families. We need to get more families. There is truth to that, but really, if you look at, if you ask any business person, if you're losing 50% of your business from existing customers within the first year, should your key objective to be go out and get more business, or should your key objective be to go and keep the business that you've already got? And so we've got to retain the families that we have, and the church can play such a vital role in supporting families to keep the families that we have.
That is such a valuable point, is retaining, because that I've heard that number before, 50% of foster families pack it in after their first placement. So, you know, retention is huge, and the church can be the solution to that by wrapping around those families. I love that. You know, we hear the big numbers. There's approximately 400,000 children in the U.S. foster care system. It is an overwhelming number. I know in the beginning of your book, Jason, you tell a story about dominoes and a little fly. Share a little bit of that, because I just thought that was amazing.
Yeah. Well, in 2018, there were this group, this team of 20 people, and their goal was to break the Guinness Book of World Records for, you know, where you stack, you place dominoes and then you push one and they all fall over, right? And so they were setting up 600,000 mini dominoes. So mini dominoes are like the size of a fingernail. And they were getting pretty close to being done. 600,000 mini dominoes. It took, you know, I think it had taken maybe a couple of weeks, 2 weeks setting it up. And and a small fly came in, saw this beautiful arrangement of dominoes, and came in for a closer look, decided to see what's going on, and did not set out to destroy a room full of dominoes, only set out to set on one of them, and did so and tipped it over and knocked the whole thing over before they were finished.
Oh, wow. So one fly kind of did that tripwire and knocked all of those dominoes over. What a picture.
And made international news. Like, what fly, you know, the lifespan of a fly is like 28 days. And so how many flies have made international news by landing on one domino? And I think there's such a beautiful picture for us in the church. We can get overwhelmed by the giant numbers, the 400,000 kids. You know, we're so used to sharing those the biggest numbers we can find, because we think that that is going to motivate people. If they see how big the problem is, people will do something. And what I always talk about is, you know, no, we should stop sharing the biggest numbers we can find, and we need to start sharing the smallest numbers we can find. Because the numbers of kids in foster care that your church cares about, that your pastor cares about, they care far more about the 43 kids that are waiting for adoption in your county than they do about the 100,000, because that's not a problem. The 100,000 kids waiting for adoption is not something they feel like they can do something about. The 43 kids, when they start to do the math on how many families do we have in this church and how many churches are in this community, and we've only got 43 kids who need families, the math is, you don't have to be great at math to realize this is really doable. Like, more than enough is not, you know, I was telling somebody this yesterday. Sometimes people think, oh, more than enough, it's an aspirational, motivational, inspirational statement. It's not meant to be. It's meant to be an attainable, like, we gave up a long time ago that it was possible, but it really is when you look at it at a county level. So our job is not to knock down 600,000 dominoes. Our job is to land on one, and God does the rest. And that's what movement really looks like.
Yeah, I love that. It was the perfect story for that, to convey that message. In chapter 3, you outlined the history of the foster care system. And I feel like, you know, a lot of folks, a lot of churches, people are trying to get on board. They do hear about it. They're inspired, but they really don't understand the history of the foster care system, the role of the church in this space. Could you give us a little history lesson on that?
Sure. Well, I mean, there are a number of those, and most of whom were in the faith community back in the mid 1800s, 1853, a name that listeners may be familiar with is Charles Loring Brace, who was a pastor and founder of Children's Aid Society in New York, saw a lot of homeless children, a lot of homeless immigrant children, and was trying to figure out, you know, how to do something about that, began to provide for these children through various local programs, but then eventually started to go travel to churches. And you're going to, if you didn't recognize his name, you'll certainly probably recognize the term orphan train, and would take children across the country into small farming communities and take them into churches and put them up on the, you know, in front of the altar. So put up for adoption is where that term comes from originally. And families would get a chance. Now, we've learned a lot about how to do and not to do recruitment since 1853, right? And this sounds so primitive and so horrible in some ways. And admittedly, you know, many of those children were adopted, you know, to be able to do work on farms and stuff like that. However, many children received loving, great homes as a result of it as well. Now, because of some of the rough edges of the prospect of doing it that way, right, over time, over decades, you know, government began to sort of look into maybe this should be regulated. Maybe we ought to think about how to do this. And so, you know, in the early 1900s, that began to happen more and more. And then in 1935, the Social Security Act provided federal funds for the provision of for child protection. And it's at that point where the government really began to step in more and provide more. And there's good things about that, right? But one of the things that eventually became true over time is that the church took a diminished role and the government took an increased role. And so the church in many ways abdicated its responsibility, began to see the role of caring for children who needed families as the role of government, and got less and less involved. And so you fast forward decades and decades into the last few decades, and you get this, where the church sort of realized, oh my gosh, for 70 years we've been asleep on this issue, mm-hmm. and Scripture is so clear that we should be engaged in this, and we need to come back to it. And so we've begun to see that reemergence of the church's engagement in it, and the church has found in some places it's more welcome than in others by government to do that, and we can get upset about that. In some ways, it's our fault. And so we have to take a posture of humility and a willingness to serve and a willingness to love and come with our bag of asphalt ready to fill in potholes and serve where we're needed.
Yeah, because it's not either or. It's not for government to solve alone, and it's not for the church to solve alone, but really a united front to come together for the kids, right? So what role really does child welfare play, and what role does or should the church be playing in this area?
Yeah, it's a good question. So child welfare plays a lot of different roles, from just recruiting and training foster families, child protection, actually going through the process of removing children from homes where they're in imminent danger, right? Making recommendations to the courts about next actions and overseeing the process by which we decide whether children go back to their biological families or, move on. And many of those functions really, really can only be uniquely played by the government. Like, the church is not in a position to decide that children are being, we're going to remove a child from somebody's home, right? The church does not have the authority in our society to do that. And that's probably for the best, right? The government does. But there are things that the church often the church has been sort of seen and relegated to being just hey, they're a recruitment pool for adoptive families, right? Like, hey, we want to engage the church, let's go on Sunday morning and recruit. And that's fine. I mean, I would say that it's been moderately successful, if maybe not successful at all in some places, because and there's a couple of reasons for that. I believe one of them is, when we go in front of a church, we start out with the biggest numbers we can find, and we're presenting people with a problem they don't feel like they can solve. Two, we're presenting them with a solution to the problem that 99.5%, that's not a real, that's a made up statistic, but yeah, most but everyone in the church doesn't feel equipped to do right now. Like, people don't come to church on Sunday morning thinking, gosh, I'm ready to add an 8-year-old to my home who has experienced severe physical abuse. That's not something that most people feel ready to do. So here's a big problem. Here's a giant problem that you probably can't solve. And the solution I'm giving you is something you don't feel ready to do. Anybody want to sign up? And we, and we wonder why no one wants to sign up. And so I think that we have to rethink the role of the church in foster care. We're not a recruitment pool. Churches are equipped to carry out some of these functions of foster care better than anyone in society, right? We've got churches who are experts at addiction recovery. We've got churches that are experts at marriage building. We've got churches that are experts in parenting and some of these other things, and in supporting and providing small groups to come around and support one another in community. These are all functions that are absolutely necessary for a healthy, well-functioning foster care system. The church has been doing them for decades, just hasn't been applying those skills to foster care. And if we would apply those same skills to foster care, we could really see it transformed. So when you talk about what's the role of the church, I think we need to expand what we think of as the role of the church. I think we have a much bigger role we can play We just have to do it humbly, and we have to come alongside in partnership with government to really demonstrate, hey, we got a lot to offer, and here's what we have.
Yeah, we've learned some of that here. When I would speak in churches, you know, over the years, because I'm an adoptive mom, I feel like, you know, well, I can tell you that everybody should be praying about becoming a foster parent or becoming an adoptive parent. But like you said, you know, then you have all these shell-shocked people in the congregation looking at you.
Yeah.
And or if you go in with the big numbers, the 400,000 kids in foster care nationwide and all of that, it sort of, you know, paralyzes them. But we finally learned that if, you know, when we go in now and speak with the church, especially with a church that we're hoping to partner with for say Care Portal, we bring the numbers for that county, the number of children in foster care, the number of children available for adoption. But also one number that I started using is the number of calls in that county to CPS for the previous year. So when the church hears, you know, there was say 3,000 calls to CPS, Child Protective Services, now only a very small portion of those calls resulted in children being removed from home and placed in foster care. But every one of those calls represents a family in crisis.
Yes.
And those are the families that the church can reach out to and wrap around. And for us, when we're, you know, talking about Care Portal, for example, we talk about how providing a bed for a child oftentimes determines whether that child remains in the home or has to be removed. Sometimes it's a car seat or something like that. And when the church realizes that they can really have an impact in helping children to not go into foster care by helping to stabilize a biological family, then they feel like, well, that's easy. We can provide a car seat. We can provide a set of bunk beds or whatever, you know, the request is. And it becomes tangible, something that the church is used to doing, providing items through their food pantries and, you know, their different closets and things that they have. They really see that, oh, this is how I can help. Well, I can do that. And they're ready to step up. Yeah.
And that first step is the first step in a journey, right? It's the hardest step to take in a journey is the first one. And once people take that first step, bringing a car seat, and they have a chance to interact with a biological mom who's trying to stay together, and all of a sudden their heart is, you know, their heart increases for that. And now the next time a need comes up, maybe it's a little bit more of a commitment for them. They're ready to take that step because they have been exposed to the need in a very real and tangible way.
Yeah. And it opens their eyes to the need right outside the church doors in their community. And then their eyes are open to child welfare. And you know, we're seeing where then families are starting to consider. They're more open to the idea of foster care once they've started working in that place and being part of that ministry. So it's a slow introduction instead of the bang them over the head with the sign up here and become a foster parent message. Yeah. Jason, in chapter 4, you talk about more than enough. And it's not just, like you've been saying, it's not just, you know, having a whole bunch of foster parents. It's explain to us what more than enough what?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. What do we mean when we say more than enough?
Yeah.
We mean four different things distinctively. So we want to see in every county in the country, now there are 3,142 counties or county equivalents in the U.S. We'd like to see, and we believe that this can happen in every one of those counties, that if 10% of churches were actively engaged in foster care in every one of those counties, that that would likely be enough to provide more than enough in these four areas. One, more than enough foster families for every child to receive an ideal placement. You know, foster children are all the time, sibling groups are separated because there's not a placement that can take the whole sibling group together. Oftentimes you're putting kids in homes where, you know, or you're having to consider putting kids in homes. You go, it's probably not the best mixture of the, you know, because of the trauma that this kid has experienced, probably not best to put them in a home with this other kid who's experienced this other kind of trauma. Those two things aren't going to mix well, but we really have no choice. So we're going to do it anyway. So we need to get to a place where we have more than enough foster families. So social workers aren't having to make those terrible, hard decisions. Right. Second, more than enough adoptive families for every child waiting for one, that every child, that there shouldn't be this backlog of kids waiting for families. We need to have a backlog of families waiting for kids. And while that sounds so contrary, because we have 100,000 kids in this country and kids in, you know, most every county waiting, we think, well, that's just always going to be a reality, right? No, think about, we have a little taste of this. Think about infant adoption. In infant adoption, private infant adoption, where people are really mostly, not always, but mostly doing private infant adoption, they're looking for healthy infants, newborn infants, there's a waiting list for 2 or 3 years often of families waiting for kids. I envision a day when that same thing can be true for a 14-year-old with autism who needs a family, mm-hmm. that there would be families waiting for that kiddo who God has uniquely gifted and called to care for those specific needs. And there's a bunch of them, and there's families that are waiting for those opportunities, so that when the unfortunate reality comes that a child's parental rights have to be terminated, because every effort has been made, and the church has been a part of that, hopefully, of trying to reunify, but every effort's been made, they have to terminate parental rights, that the very next step is, oh, well, we've got, you know, 10 families to choose from for this kiddo. That should be our reality. And it can be our reality. It's just not right now for those older kids, kids with medical needs, that sort of thing. And then more than enough help for biological families who want to stay together and want to get back together. One of the things that we have done in the church traditionally is we've thought about foster care as a system that's meant to take kids out of bad families and put them into good ones. However, if there's anyone that ought to believe in the power of redemption, the power of reconciliation, the power of restoring broken things, it ought to be us. It ought to be those of us that follow Jesus, who ourselves were broken, who we have experienced great destruction in light of our own sin and grossness, and the families that we've experienced it, and we've experienced that restoration. And so we, out of anyone, should believe that we serve a God who can restore broken things. And so we ought to be involved. We ought to be in the business of helping to restore broken families and bring them back together. And then the fourth is more than enough support for all these families, for foster, kinship, adoptive, and biological families, that we wrap around those families. We help them, even when you ask them, hey, what help do you need? And they say, oh, we're good. And you say, no, you're not. We're here. We're showing up. We're going to babysit. We're going to bring meals. We're going to walk you through this so that you stick with it, so that you're healthy and doing well. We need more than enough in all of those areas.
Yeah. And we have one story that we often share, which was, it was started out as a care portal connection, and where a church brought a crib to a single mom with twins. And, you know, these two women that came with the crib and put the crib together really connected with this mom. They went back to her house because they saw, you know, she had moved into a new little apartment. She didn't have any curtains. So these moms were like, hey, you know, could we help you get curtains, and we'll come and hang them? And, you know, one thing led to another. And then this mom needed a ride to church, but she started to express an interest in going to church. And then she started going to the moms group. You know, this single mom, who I'm pretty sure had been in foster care herself at one point, she needed to learn how to be a parent. And she needed those kind of support. Yeah. So, you know, those women's Bible studies and moms groups and things like that can really be more of a community. And that's a lot of times that isolation that these families are experiencing. When they can have community and have that kind of support, it helps them to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly right. And like we said before, our churches are uniquely set up like that moms group. We're uniquely set up our church staff spend the best hours of their week setting up the environments that are perfect for many of the needs that exist in foster care. We just have to sort of bend things that way a little bit. We have to make a few adaptations to make that work.
Yeah. So along those same lines, at the end of chapter 4, you wrote, foster care at its best is also about family restoration. So explain that.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that as the church has reengaged in foster care, it's gotten a little bit of a reputation for in some places, is being about, yeah, here come all the Christians. They just want they just keep talking about adoption. That's all that they want. And child welfare has known for a while and continues to know. And there's been a Families First Act here recently, a national or federal measure that really helps redirect funds towards preservation efforts. And so child welfare, that's the direction they're really moving in. They want to see families restored. And so we, I think that's what part of what we should be about. Now, there can always be pendulum swings in child welfare. And one of the things you have to be careful of is saying, okay, now we're going to everything, you know, we're going to reunify families no matter the cost. And even if that means putting a child back in some place where it's dangerous for them or not safe, you know, obviously we can't have that, don't want that. Right. Adoption will still play a role in the foster care system for sure. But I think we're a long ways from that. I think we're a long ways from at least us in the church saying we've done everything we can do to help restore biological families. We've done everything we can do to come alongside, mentor those families, train those families, encourage those families, support those families. And until, you know, if we haven't given them everything that we have, then it's too early to say, well, it's time to remove those kids from that home and put them in a better home. We've got a lot more to give there.
Yeah, a lot for the church to be doing, right? Yeah. Because most often kids don't enter foster care because of abuse or you know, whether it be physical or sexual abuse. A lot of times it's neglect. I know you had the numbers in your book. 62% of the children removed are really because for neglect, and neglect could look like, you know, mom came out of a domestic violence situation. They don't have any beds or furniture or food in this house. And a teacher calls, you know, because school teachers are mandated reporters. So CPS is called. So it's not so much that heinous abuse. It's families spiraling downward because they've hit hard times. And there's a lot of that kind of thing going on. So there's a way that the church can step in there and be involved and really support families to keep kids home with their parents. Let's jump to chapter 6. I know we can't do all, I think there's 15 chapters in your book. We can't do all of them, but I wanted to pick out a few things that I thought were really important. In chapter 6, you lay the foundation for three key elements of building a local foster care movement: prayer, vision, and unity. Can you unpack those a little bit for us?
Yeah. Well, when we're talking about a local foster care movement, again, families surrounded by churches working together and surrounded by community partners, right, to transform foster care, we're talking about that local movement. We really mean, you know, movement in a spiritual sense. So we're talking about a spiritual movement, and no spiritual movement in history has ever started apart from prayer. We're not talking about, hey, let's see if we can make foster care a fad in your community. We're not talking about, hey, let's see if we can make it a program in your community. It's already a program. It's been a program for a long time. And fads, you know, they quickly change and people move on to the next social justice fad, right? And so that's not what we're talking about here. What we really want is for God to move on the hearts of men and women of faith to engage in this issue and seek justice and love our neighbors well. And so it's a spiritual movement, and that doesn't ever happen, has never happened in history apart from prayer. And so we say that, you know, your very first step is to gather other people who are passionate like you and begin praying. Pray together once a week. We've got prayer calls in many, many states that gather on the phone, and they're broken up state by state where you can get together. You can pray for 15 minutes a week. I mean, it's a 15-minute prayer call, and those folks are praying for more than enough in their state. So prayer is a really vital ingredient. Vision. You know, we often our foster care work ends up being defined and driven by tactics. Now, tactics are important. You know, we see a need and then we develop a program or a tactic. You know, hey, we need more families. Let's hold a recruitment event. Hey, you know, we need to engage a church more in foster care. Let's do a backpack drive. Hey, our agency needs more money to help the kids that we help. Let's do a fundraiser. Those are all tactics, and they're always driven by need. That's fine. I mean, it's not that I'm advocating you get rid of tactics, but tactics shouldn't drive what you do, because you can get to the end of the year and it's filled up with drives, with fundraising events, and with programs, and you're no closer to really the end goal, which is providing families, loving families for every child in the community. And so you really have to be driven by vision. And vision, it outlines a preferred future. You know, what would it look like for there to be more than enough adoptive families for every one of the 42 kids in our county that need adoptive families? What if we could do that? And, you know, so you're defining it by a number, you're defining that vision by a geography, so our county, and you're defining it with a timeline. Say, what, by 2022, could we raise up so that we would have more than enough? We take that number from 42 down to virtual zero. And in the next 2 or 3 years, like, that's a vision that people can get behind. Now, vision without tactics is you know, we've all been a part of those things too, and you can't have that. You've got to then, okay, now how are we actually going to execute that?
Right.
Super important, but you got to have vision. These things have to be led by vision. And then unity. Foster care has become a space where people have, you know, it's been defined by autonomous action, good organizations, good people doing good work over and over again, but without collaboration, without unity. And it's a problem that's it's too big for those that are getting paid to do it. And it's and it just can't, the thing that needs to be done, providing more than enough, cannot be done without people depending on each other and working together. One of the things I used to think about collaboration is it's about getting people together so we can figure out what to do. Well, I think that's part of it, but I think an equally important part of it is it's getting together so that we can figure out what we can stop doing. So there's so much duplication going on, and I see it all the time. I see, you know, and if we would get together with people enough, and when I mean enough, I mean like on a monthly basis or more, we begin to see, hey, I'm doing these different things, and one of the things I'm doing a C+ job at, and there's another organization in town that does an A+ job. So why don't I just stop doing the thing that I'm doing a C+ job at and be dependent on my brother or sister who is doing an A+ job? And that is a picture of the body of Christ. Like it is the ear deciding that it being the ear is good enough, and I'm going to be the best ear I can be. I don't need to be the kneecap, and I'm going to be dependent on the kneecap to do the kneecap's job. And I don't have to do all the jobs of all the parts of the body. And I think that unity, that collaboration, is essential if we're actually going to get to more than enough in our communities.
Yeah, I love that. We see that a lot with our churches that are participating in Care Portal, where they're, you know, we have one that's, you know, they've decided that their lane is going to be whenever there's a request for a crib, they provide a pack and play. That's their lane. That's what they're going to do. And they leave some of the other stuff to some of the other churches. You know, churches with food pantries say, we're going to provide anytime there's a request for food, we're on that one. But I've seen collaboration among several churches coming together to meet a larger need to support a family. So it's amazing to see collaboration. And I'm seeing that the churches that are doing that together, who are really uniting together to serve families, they're just sort of, you know, it's sort of like the wind beneath their wings. They're thriving in that because they are collaborating together. And that's what we're meant to be doing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yep.
So love that. So like I said earlier, this book is an excellent resource to activate foster care movement in our own counties and our own communities. At the end of chapter 7, I love how you lay out 10 dialogue starters for the church to start a conversation with their local child welfare office. Chapter 9, you discuss 6 areas the church can actively be engaged in. Like I said, we don't have time to unpack all 15 chapters, but Jason, what is your main objective for the local church?
Well, I really I love the local church. I feel like it's God's chosen vessel to carry out, carry his love into the world. That we are the ones to demonstrate and to show what pursuit looks like. Like we have been pursued by a Heavenly Father who has not given up on us, who has loved us, who has loved us despite our own shortcomings and failings. And I want us as the church to reflect that heart of pursuit that God has shown towards us, towards others, towards the broken, mm-hmm. towards the hurting. And my desire for the local church is to step in that role, which it is doing in so many areas, but to do it specifically in this area of foster care. And my real passion is that we would again believe that that more than enough is possible. We serve a God of more than enough. When God provided manna for the Israelites in the desert, he didn't provide not enough. He didn't provide just enough. He provided more than enough. When Jesus catered lunch for 5,000 on the side of the hill that day, he didn't provide not enough. He didn't provide just enough. He provided more than enough. And when Jesus came across the fishermen who had their nets out all night long and they didn't catch anything. And he told them to cast their nets on the other side. He didn't provide not enough. He didn't provide just enough. He provided more than enough to the point that the nets were breaking. And that's the God we serve. That is his character. And I think that God is capable of providing more than enough for kids and families in our community. And I want to see us as followers of Christ ask him to use us to do that.
Wow. I love that. And so give us a call to action. Give us some orders. What do you want us to do?
Well, I mean, one is if you in listening to this, you go, well, maybe it is possible. Maybe it is. Then, we want you to come and visit morethanenoughtogether.org, which is the website for this national campaign, multiple organizations working together to see 10% of churches actively engaged in foster care by 2025. Take a church assessment there at that, and it'll help you. 10-minute assessment helps you get a report back on here are the things that our church could be doing, here are the things our church is doing, here's the things we could be doing better to become more engaged in foster care. So that's morethanenoughtogether.org. Then, this book, you can find it on Amazon. You can also go to mtebook.com. So MTE is in More Than Enough. So mtebook.com. And you can go there and learn about that. And as you mentioned, we have a new podcast called the More Than Enough Podcast, where we really are deliberate about highlighting, like we've talked about, all of these different places where this stuff is actually happening. It's not like we just made up this stuff and put it in a book and said, gee, I hope this stuff works. It's the book is a reflection of what has already been working. And so we want to highlight those places where it's working, interview key leaders and on the ground people who are making foster care movement work in their communities. And that's the More Than Enough podcast. The trailer for that is up. The first episode will drop soon. So you can subscribe to that on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast.
Yeah, I just did that. I just subscribed because I'm like, I want to be in on that conversation. I want to hear more about this. So now, just to clarify for our listeners, at the website is morethanenoughtogether.org, and a church can actually go on there and take a church assessment.
Yes. Yeah. It's a 10-minute assessment. And the great thing about it is you can take it if you're a church foster care ministry leader in your church, you can take that assessment and then you can actually have that link sent automatically through the system to a pastor, to a foster family in your church. So the report you get back eventually could have the sort of perspectives of about 5 or 6 different people in your church about how your church is doing at caring for kids in care, supporting families. It evaluates your church in 6 different areas and then gives you practical next steps for how to go to that next level of engagement.
Oh, I love that. So I know we're giving away 5 copies of your book, Until There's More Than Enough. So we're thanking you for that. Thank you so much. And we're going to go live on Facebook on the day that this airs, Monday the 29th, to start getting people to sign up for that. So where else can we find your book? We can't give them all away. We're giving away 5, but where else can our listeners grab a copy of your book?
Yeah. So again, just on Amazon.com, look for Until There's More Than Enough. And then you can also learn more about mtebook.com. And there'll be information there eventually once we get that up about how to order in bulk. If you want to order several for your community or your church, you can do that as well.
Oh, that's a great idea. I always love to give something when I connect with a church. Love to get something in the hands of the pastors, so that they can start to really be equipped for this ministry. So we're going to make sure that we put links to everything in the show notes for this episode. And also there's a corresponding blog post that we'll do on our website at justicefororphansny.org. We'll put links to everything on there as well. Boy, we thank you so much. I love what you're doing. This is episode for our listeners who might be looking for this podcast or looking for what the links are. I believe we are at episode 227, believe it or not. Checking out all my notes here. Jason, thank you so much for writing this book and your heart and passion for kids in foster care and for being on the show today.
Thank you, Sandra. Thanks so much for using your voice and platform for kids and for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Like I said, we're going to put the links to everything in the show notes for this episode. Remember to hop on over to my Facebook page, Sandra Flack, to check out the Facebook Live video for a chance to win one of those 5 copies of Jason's book. And thank you for listening to episode 227 today of the Orphans No More podcast. If you were inspired by today's show, please subscribe, leave a review, share it with your friends, share it on your social media. We really appreciate that. And of course, let us know. We want to know what you want to hear. We love hearing from you. Contact us at justicefororphansny.org, or you can even email me at sandraflackjfo.com. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans, and stay tuned to our podcast and social media for news about the release of my book coming up, hopefully late summer, early fall. I anticipate the release, so stay tuned. And thanks again for listening. We look forward to having you here next time on Orphans No More.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.